One Folgate Street isn't just a house. It's an architectural masterpiece that demands perfection from its inhabitants. This minimalist marvel stands in stark contrast to the Victorian homes surrounding it, a pale stone cube with horizontal glass slits, completely devoid of visible electrical outlets, light switches, or any hint of clutter. The house requires complete submission to its 200 rules. No books, no rugs, no personal items, no curtains. Most significantly, its enigmatic architect, Edward Monkford, personally approves all tenants through an extensive application process. When you step inside, the pristine emptiness feels both liberating and suffocating, a blank canvas that promises transformation but demands conformity. Would you trade your personal freedom for the promise of living in architectural perfection? Emma Matthews and Jane Cavendish never meet, yet their lives follow eerily parallel paths. Both women, strikingly similar in appearance, find themselves drawn to One Folgate Street at vulnerable moments in their lives. Emma seeks refuge after a traumatic break-in, viewing the house as an opportunity to reinvent herself, to shed her chaotic nature like a skin. Jane approaches the house after suffering the devastating stillbirth of her daughter Isabel, seeing healing potential in its uncompromising design. Where others seek cold restriction, these women perceive possibility. Both are approved by Edward despite the house's notorious selectivity. Both become sexually involved with him, both receive identical pearl necklaces, and both discover disturbing truths about the house's history. The mirroring creates a haunting sense that history is repeating itself, with Jane unwittingly walking the same path that led to Emma's death. Edward Monkford emerges as a fascinating antagonist, a man whose obsession with perfection extends from his buildings to his relationships. After losing his wife and son during One Folgate Street's construction, Edward embraced extreme minimalism, creating buildings that aren't merely aesthetic statements, but psychological experiments designed to shape their inhabitants' behavior. Architecture is about shaping human experience, he explains during an award ceremony. Not just creating aesthetically pleasing buildings, but helping people resist temptation. His controlling nature extends to his personal relationships, which he approaches with clinical precision. He seeks women who physically resemble his dead wife, offering them unencumbered relationships. Intense connections deliberately designed to end when they're no longer perfect. The house becomes an extension of Edward himself, beautiful, innovative, and utterly controlling. A sophisticated trap where he exercises complete dominance while maintaining the facade of creating revolutionary living spaces. Emma Matthews embodies the unreliable narrator, weaving different versions of her story for different audiences. Initially sympathetic as a victim of violence, her credibility gradually unravels. We discover she fabricated a rape accusation to hide infidelity and tells conflicting stories about encounters with colleagues. Her therapist suggests she might suffer from pseudologia fantastica, constructing fantasy worlds to present herself more favorably. I found it easier to lie than to tell the truth, Emma admits in her final letter to Edward. Her deceptions stem from self-loathing and a desperate desire to be loved despite her flaws. Jane initially appears more stable and honest, openly discussing her grief over Isabel's stillbirth. Yet she harbors her own deceptions, concealing her pregnancy from Edward and, in the novel's final twist, revealing she deliberately targeted him as a genetic father for her child from their first meeting. The house itself becomes a metaphor for these psychological states, its pristine surfaces concealing complex systems, its minimalist aesthetic masking surveillance technology. One Folgate Street isn't merely a setting, but an active character whose design influences its inhabitants' behaviors and emotional responses. The house's extreme minimalism, with its bare white walls and absence of personal artifacts, forces residents to confront themselves without the protective barrier of possessions. When you can't hide behind your stuff, you have to face who you really are, Emma notes. The sophisticated technological features create a complex psychological dynamic. Motion-activated lighting and personalized showers generate an uncanny sensation of being understood and cared for, while simultaneously enabling invasive surveillance. Japanese influences permeate the design, particularly the Karasansui Meditation Garden, representing the attempt to impose order on chaos. The incorporation of Hitoba Shira, the ancient Japanese practice of human sacrifices buried in building foundations, takes on particular resonance when Edward reveals his wife and son are buried beneath the house's threshold. Each architectural element is designed to create specific psychological effects, revealing how spaces shape not only our behaviors, but our very perception of reality. Throughout the novel, characters find themselves trapped in destructive patterns they seem powerless to break. Edward's obsession manifests in his selection of women who physically resemble his dead wife, presenting them with identical pearl necklaces, taking them to the same restaurants, and even recycling romantic dialogue. His meticulous repetition suggests he isn't forming authentic connections, but attempting to recreate a carefully preserved moment in time. Simon's obsession with Emma manifests through surveillance and identity theft, creating elaborate text conversations by impersonating Edward. After Emma's death, his fixation transfers seamlessly to Jane, revealing a profound psychological disturbance where the women become interchangeable vessels for his obsession. Jane ultimately breaks this cycle through decisive action, fighting back against Simon's deception and rejecting Edward's attempt to start fresh by giving up her unborn child. Her decision to name her son Toby, rather than following Edward's suggestion, becomes a powerful assertion of autonomy, demonstrating that breaking free from destructive patterns requires consciously rejecting the comfort of familiar cycles. At its heart, The Girl Before examines the psychological cost of pursuing perfection. One Folgate Street stands as a monument to architectural perfectionism, yet this perfection demands sacrifice. The deaths of Edward's family during construction, and later Emma's fatal fall. Edward's relationships inevitably crumble because no partner can maintain his exacting standards. His perfectionism manifests as narcissism, completely unable to tolerate human flaws. The novel suggests that perfectionism itself is pathological, a maladaptive response to trauma rather than a virtue. Edward's extreme minimalism developed after his family's deaths, suggesting it's primarily a coping mechanism. By the novel's conclusion, Jane makes the transformative decision to reject this destructive pursuit, choosing instead to embrace the beautiful imperfection of her unexpected pregnancy and her son with Down syndrome. "I'd rather have the mess," she tells Edward, choosing the complicated reality of love over sterile fantasy. In this choice lies the novel's most profound insight, that beneath every perfect facade lies complexity, and that true beauty emerges not from flawlessness, but from authenticity and connection.